went out and we asked our clients before we went on this journey, because we were thinking of doing it internally and so forth, we said, well, what's the problem with Linux? It looks good on paper. In fact, it's dynamite software when you run it in the lab. I said, well, lack of support. It's great, but it's my job. If it doesn't work, who do I ring? If I'm running Apache on Windows and I call Microsoft, it's the length of time that Linux has been around, in fact, over a decade. And there were lack of applications, and of course there was splintering and so forth. Everyone understand the splintering argument? Because I'd like to debunk this one publicly. People talk about Linux forking, saying you're going to end up with all these different versions of Linux and none of them are going to work together and everything else. Hopefully I'm not taking too much thunder from a session tomorrow, but it was licensed under Berkeley Software Distribution, the BSD license, which said you can take all the software, it's all open source, you can have it, and you can change it and do whatever you like with it and repackage it, but you don't have to share it with anybody else. You can make a proprietary close from that point on. It was really forward-thinking. Let's license it under GPL that says if you change it, you have to give those changes up to the rest of the community. That guarantees that there will never, ever be a Microsoft or a Novell Linux. It will always just be Linux. There'll be different distributions, but it'll always be the same Linux. You use Microsoft software based on NT, you are using that NetBSD TCP/IP stack. So it's okay sometimes to use open source software. So what we went around doing was saying, well, if those are the barriers, how do we break them? And we had to break them for two reasons. One, our own internal ISNT people. This is how we sort of approached this. We'll share some of the numbers here from our own internal studies. We undertook a Novell Open Desktop Initiative. In fact, today, the majority of all Novell staff not only use OpenOffice, but they use a Linux desktop. At the back end, we don't use any Microsoft software in our system. Right? You haven't spoken to a sales rep recently. Ross in the back there. Ross is a technical sales rep. And so we've actually moved on that. And we did that for a number of reasons. We've actually always run our own beta software, because we figure if it's not good enough for us, it's not good enough for you. Which means if you've actually been the CIO of the migration process, have actually undergone the migration process, there's a little bit of actual practical reality in there. It's not a whole bunch of marketing stuff. So we're actually doing this. What we found was we did three basic ROI studies, which we actually did and then implemented and then verified the cost savings. Office on Windows for those people who are transitioning. Let's start using as much open source software as you can without changing the platform. And finally, we looked at Linux on the desktop. We based these on the 1,000 early adopters that we had. Now, early adopter in Linux means that your manager says, good news, you're now an early adopter. You're actually on Linux. So what we found, and we actually looked at the number of loads and so forth, if you want this presentation, it is open source. And if you just come to pkangro@novell.com, I'm happy to send it to you. The numbers speak for themselves on the side there. For those of you who are non-accountants, I'll explain them. 3 years, $250,000 on that server implementation, right through down to here. Now, the reason it makes bigger cost savings here with the proprietary Unix platforms is I'm typically also running proprietary hardware. So I've got a dual saving, software and hardware. Whereas on Windows, I can run on, well, arguably Intel is proprietary, but there are a few different versions of it to pay for the support guys. The final look we did at the desktop was we said the payback period was in 34 months. So this is a difficult area, because when you look at Linux desktop, people say, well, this is probably the most problematic. I've got all these applications that only run on Win32. So we have legacy Microsoft applications like spreadsheets and so forth with macros written in them to actually run those applications natively on a Linux desktop. We also use thin client technology to allow those people who may only have minor use of those applications to come in via a thin client off their Linux desktop. Our longer term, at all possible. Now, the good news here is we were cash flow positive actually 1 year after. So depending on how you'd like to spin this to people, it actually fully paid for itself in 34 months, or cash flow positive at the end of 12 months, which is, you know, reasonably good. So here we sort of adopt the same attitude as that laid-back counsellor, because this is an ongoing saving forever. When people talk about opportunity cost, they say there is a cost involved in migrating, and that's true. But there is a cost also involved in not migrating. It's that opportunity lost cost. Now, it's never realised until you do it, so it always remains yourself. It's going to be different for every organisation. But I'd argue that Novell, we're about 8,000 people, we're spread internationally, we saw significant cost savings from what we did. And we did it in the worst possible environment because, you know, everyone at Novell is a software expert. We found it a very valuable and positive experience financially. But what about anybody else? Okay, it's fair enough that the vendor has to eat their own dog food. You'd at least sort of expect that. But what about the real world? A lot of very large conservative companies, we heard about a few, started using Linux. These companies cannot be easily fooled. Some of them are very conservative financial companies. You see the names up there. They didn't do it because it was cool or it was trendy. They did it because it just happened to make good business sense. Now, it doesn't make sense in every single application, in every place immediately. And in fact, I'd be terrified. You guys are doing it. I have it on good assurance that the guys at NASA did it because they found there was no controlled alt-delete in space. So it really kind of had to work every time. That's probably the weakest joke for the afternoon, and that's fine. The interesting thing, what I ask, the discussion comes around cost savings, which is exactly where our IS&T guys looked at it to say we needed to save cost. Because internally, our IT was like any other company's IT, always subject to, I need you to do 50% more with 20% less money year on year. So we were forced into it ourselves. So there's an upfront and an ongoing cost savings, arguing and continuing high cost to actually maintain that. So anyone who tells you that there are no cost savings in Linux, you may have to ask about their vested interest. Oh, it's also easy to work out. All of the negative articles about Linux and open source software reside in one place on the internet. So it's really easy to work out what the negative articles are. Just go to Microsoft, etc. It's also, I guess, higher security. The thing we like about it at Novell is obviously we're running a secure business just like a lot of other people trying to run. And because it's open, we see inside of it. We don't need to ask anyone's permission to look into the product. It's nice that government agencies can look into Windows, but I think most businesses are called Unix. And Unix was designed from day one to be multi-user, multitasking, and networked. It's not DOS in a clown suit. That was a better one. See, he laughed at that. Good. So it has a lot of fantastic inherited architectural security features. So for those people who said, well, Linux is immature, it's... No, Unix. Guess what? It's still Unix architecturally, just without all of the costs associated up front to get it. We also see the companies saying it's now easier to get support. All of the major players in hardware support Linux. 5 years ago, it was a very different story. Today, arguably, and the values. Again, they look at it as a technology that says, why pay for something that's good enough anyway in open source? Reinvest the money into the application, which is arguably what makes any organisation's problems go away, not the software that comprises the operating system. And control and freedom of choice. The audience at the break about why he was so fanatical about Linux. And he said, the thing about Linux is that the Indians in general, very, very proud nation of people. And they say, why should I have my documents of government in a proprietary format and have to ask a third party permission to open my documents with our sovereignty? So they said open source for them is all about freedom of government. because they don't have to ask anybody permission to do anything if they're using open source. And I thought, that's a pretty powerful reason to look at open source from a position of government. And it's arguably the universal option. SUSE Linux uses, in fact, exactly the same core for all of their distributions. And it's very neat. I heard a great comment from an IBM sales rep, and I'll also disclose I worked for IBM for a long time, but quite a few years ago, so I still have the odd connection. And he said to me, it's really good when you guys brought out SUSE Linux Enterprise Server 9, bought on the same day the same version of software across all 59 of our hardware platforms, something they'd never been able to do before. So when I talk to a CIO, Linux is not the introduction of another operating system. It is the introduction of the only operating system you will need to have in the future. It's a convergent technology. In the industry, it was interesting to hear our friend from Microsoft talk about different internet protocols, because I was at IBM selling Token Ring and SNA. So I fought this small little upstart company called Cisco. Now, they lost in the end, because standards rule the day. We ended up with TCP/IP and Ethernet and everything else being played out. So it's not uncommon in the IT business. We're just moving up the ISO stack, that's all. We've just come to that next layer. It's nice that someone else has noticed. High scalability. Again, if anyone hasn't been reading the news, people like Cray only use Linux to build all their supercomputers, Red Storm. So it's highly scalable. I won't bore you with process, because this is a thing the Germans love to tell me about. Because when I say, so what's the difference between a distribution and distribution? They're all the same, right? For those people involved in quality and certification actually know that process is very important, although about as interesting a company, which is why we purchased them. They basically have a one-to-one relationship. All of the open source project has a direct relationship to an individual engineer at SUSE. So if there's a package in our distribution, there's an engineer who knows the guy who wrote the package and is part of his community. So there's a one-to-one relationship, because you have to interface with the community. We take that code, we strip out all the potential. It doesn't always work nice. So if we put it out as a distribution and say, guess what, if it breaks, call us, we actually want to make sure it doesn't break. So we write those patches, we give them out to the community, and we take a standard kernel build, and we make that the same kernel across all the platforms. And they did that because they realised, because they were very early into porting. In fact, the first platform they ported to after Intel, the fashion. So when they ported platforms like AMD, which they were the first for, their series mainframe, they were the first for, etc. And then they test the living daylights out of this. The Germans like nothing better than telling you about their process for test and regression and getting it right. And the real neat thing is that when you turn the handle on this, if there's a bug somewhere in the kernel, we have to turn the handle on this, fully automated, less than 24 hours. That, I said, I think I can see the value in a process. So when you, quote-unquote, buy Linux, what you're doing is you're purchasing maintenance and support. You're effectively paying for things like this that says you don't have to do that. And when you understand the complexity in doing this, you'll be thankful you don't. So that's where we make money, unless you have an awful lot of money and an awful lot of people, which is something most people don't have. So we do engineering, we do support. That was the other big thing. People said, well, who do I call? Well, we'd like you to call one vendor, and that's us, if you buy our distribution of it, which is pretty straightforward. Well, so we have lots of engineers. We have over 800 worldwide. We have two centres here in the Asia Pacific. And we do a whole bunch of work. We've introduced a whole bunch of technologies to make it manageable. We've open sourced. Probably one of the key things about our distribution was something called YAST, yet another setup tool. It's one of those nifty open source words. And basically, it's a uniform set of APIs that we've open sourced that allows people like H proprietary plugins, it could be managed straight out of the box, because we tried to make all of those things enterprise ready. We also did a lot of testing, especially with IBM. We tested on all platforms for common criteria level certification, and I assume many of you working here in Canberra would be familiar with Common Criteria. But that's really about security certification. It's not just the platform, but it's also the process. And so we're the only Linux distribution that's at a 4-plus certification. I believe at last count, when I had a look, Windows 2003 had no certifications yet. But I could be wrong. And of course, lastly, there's an indemnity. Well, secondly, the indemnity, otherwise it'd take you to court. I think they used to call that something in the early days. But anyway, so far they haven't been successful. But what we do is that if you buy SUSE Linux Enterprise Server 9, etc. from Novell, and you get one of those letters, you send it to our legal team and we take it over for you. Because we know what's in the kernel and we also know what SCO has and what they don't have. Interestingly enough, of all the customers we've dealt with, I had a chance to meet Linus Torvalds last year at a Novell event. I asked him one question, because I only had a chance to ask one question. He's the closest thing to a rock star I've ever seen, someone who writes software, but anyway. And I said, so what if there's a problem in the kernel, and this is identified in this huge problem? He said, well, if someone tells me where the offending lines are, they can lock me in a room, but nobody will tell him where the problem is. It's just a threat. The same threat, in fact, that Microsoft made when they said, if you are using anything other than Star Office, they reserve the right to prosecute you if you use OpenOffice. This is the open source company. The other thing is, we've also got some friends who... What that means is if Linux is found to have been pinged on a patent that one of these companies has, and let me tell you, the IBM patent and the HP portfolio are huge, they'll say, it's okay, we don't mind. Because they understand the value of open source and sharing. A TCO comparison for 5-year TCO between Linux and Windows. And it's a real apples to apples test. What turns out is that Windows is a few percent cheaper over 5 years to run than Linux. Not such a good result for Linux. But hang on, read further. Read through the report, don't read the highlights, but print it off. It's about 40 pages. And keep going until you see one little thing was run on Intel and Linux was run on a mainframe. I can see that's apples to apples, can you? Yeah. What that says to me is that it's actually as cheap to run Linux on a mainframe as it is to run Windows on Intel, which is a pretty bizarre claim. So beware of the facts. And I guess I'll leave you with... And he said, I'm doing a free operating system. Just a hobby, won't be big. It's great how people start off and they kind of say, oh, it's just going to be a bit of a hobby. And of course, the rest, as they say, was history. Fascinating thing to find. I guess I will leave you with this information. Choosing a technology, I guess, that actually works best for your organisation. And the best way to do that is to understand the technology. Don't believe me, don't believe the other guys, don't necessarily believe all of the consultants out there that also want your money. Actually do something practical. All of our Linux software is downloadable from our website for free. Remember, it's open source. In the meantime, try and maintain your independence. The good thing about open source, and the bad thing that I say to CIOs, is that again, you now must exercise all those grey cells. Because again, you can actually start building a proper architecture that's independent of hardware and software and everyone else's proprietary standards. Because things like Linux have done, and finally scale up to a mid-range or a mainframe computer running the same application, and I'm not bound to a specific hardware platform. So it's done really a wonderful thing from an architectural point of view. Thank you very much for your attention. I'm happy to take questions if there are some. Collective. That was probably a comment more intended for the previous speaker, but other parts of this geography, especially places like India, we're very happy and proud to be using the SUSE name. We have no intention of changing that. The things that are Novell, and I guess we're a mixed source company. You know, we are happy to have proprietary software. We're also equally happy to say, and here are some options in open source. For those people who, you know, have a specific reason, Linux desktop with an accumulation of software, but you'll still see the SUSE Linux piece there.
Paul, you said that the Novell is probably the most possible environment to
It's tough being a CIO in a technology company. So my comment there was more in reference to the fact that we have a company full of experts, and they all have their own way of wanting to do things. So in a way, you could say it was probably the best possible environment, but from an implementation standpoint, he will get a big piece of my mind as to why it does this or why it doesn't do that. And so that's the environment. So we're very critical of what we do ourselves. So in that instance, I guess, you know, we're our own best quality control department, but we're all participants. So it makes an interesting time for the people actually trying to do the change. Yeah. We open source our RPM builder package, so you can actually participate in the distributions of SUSE Linux. We're constantly reviewing what actually gets packaged with that. So if there are people that would like to have their software package, open source software package with the SUSE build, we're happy to review all of that. They have basically all of our development tools on one open source platform. So all of the J2EE engines, the XML stuff, everything all on one platform. So if you're a software developer and you want to develop to that platform, we will give you a complete set of tools downloadable free. So we're happy and we encourage people to support what we're doing, absolutely. Yes. We've got, I don't know, a few hundred people here. We have sales, marketing, engineering. We do full on-site support here, etc. So we have a pretty reasonable showing here. In fact, interestingly, Australia and New Zealand are both areas of large growth for Novell internationally. Oh, sorry, yep. It's a few things. In terms of the immediate Linux business, there's the maintenance aspect. So people take on a maintenance agreement and we provide them with immediate patches when they're available. We also provide them with a level of support, and that can range from you send us an email right through to we actually provide an engineer on site, which we've done for several companies in Australia. Web services products with Extend, we have identity management products, we have directory, meta directory. So there are a whole bunch of services on top, because a Linux distribution does not an enterprise solution make. It is a piece of it. So when people say, okay, I've got this now in place, but how do I manage it? How do I put in every identity of every Australian citizen into a directory, for instance, that goes along with that, that also makes money out of that space?
See, I mean, support is notoriously a tight company business.
Yes? There is probably more money to be made above the line with Linux than below the line, but you go through the same engineering process, same level of escalation, etc. So you can get exactly the same support. And in fact, if you take out a enterprise support agreement, we don't actually care which Novell products you have as part of that agreement. All of them get serviced the same way. Yes? And what we did was, I guess, as some people said, was technically impossible. We made all NetWare services run on the Linux kernel as well as the NetWare kernel. So all the directory, identity, file rights, etc., all now run on the Linux kernel. So if I'm a traditional NetWare customer that's running NetWare on a NetWare kernel, and they say, I'd actually want to get to a Linux kernel, Paul, running NetWare kernel, one side running Linux kernel, running a common set of services on top, and we actually fail over the NetWare side, the Linux site takes over and you say, see, you've just migrated. It's that simple. You mount the same file, same directory, everything. The move for network customers to Linux is really a no-brainer. We're at last question time or beyond?
One more question.
Yep.
You mentioned something interesting that you contributed on the C libraries to OpenLRAP.
Yep. We wanted to make people aware of identity management. We wanted to make it a pervasive technology. It's a bit like why we're trying to use it and contribute great solutions to it and other applications that need to work with it. In fact, I'll close on one little anecdote that actually very simply cements this, because when we announced this whole stuff with Linux, it was a very interesting time in the company. And a few weeks later, went to our BrainShare show about two years ago, which is a big worldwide show. We have about 8,000 people. And they drop files in there and they automatically get synced to a host and they get synced between machines, etc. That was a proprietary product. They made the announcement on the day one of the conference that we were going to open source that product. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. I mean, how are we going to make money out of this if we open source the product? And I went to talk to the product manager. And he said, what we've done, we've open sourced the client, Napster by Novell. I can share stuff between two peer-to-peers. And he said, we open sourced all that code. In fact, this is a scary part. We actually wrote this in C#. We wrote it under Eclipse, and we wrote it around the .NET framework, and we made it run on Linux, Windows, and Mac. And we opened, well, yeah, okay, but I still don't get it. He said, no, you're not listening, Paul. We wrote this code. At the end of day one, when I went to bed, they found 16 bugs in the code. When I woke up, 10 of them had been fixed, and all my guys were asleep. We had a better client code. The majority of the smarts is in the client. So I said, so what are we selling? Directory and security integration around that. And maybe people would be prepared to pay for that, because somewhere, sometime, they might get audited, or they might be a victim of something called Sarbanes-Oxley. And they have to stand up in court and say, we can categorically show this was never shared with any of these guys. That's what people will pay for. So they're able to refocus that team to do something different. In fact, dual model of open source and proprietary. Thank you.
I think we should give Paul a big round of applause. Last one today is always the hardest, so I think you'll get Paul for some pretty good anecdotes. And I'm sorry some of our previous speakers couldn't hear the jokes, so I'll send you an audio recording. Doubts or comments about how you get there? Maps are available from the front desk at the front, and I'll eventually be heading that way myself, so if you get lost, I'll look around for anyone who's wearing a tag, because he's heading in the wrong direction. But until then, thank you, and I'll see you again this evening or tomorrow.
I knew she was in trouble. When I spoke to you, I was in discussions with her, and she was waiting for they have by now the CEO to have 3 weeks. So she said, I'm coming to the CEO. She
Yes.
And really, that was.